Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hanselkian. Today, we'll discuss the article by Brooks et al. Titled, Metabolic Syndrome Impairs Reactivity and Wall Mechanics of Cerebral Resistance Arteries in Obese Zucker Rats. This article published online December 1st, 2015. Joining me today are guest editor Akos Kohler, lead author Paul Chandler, and content expert Julian Lombard. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. Indeed, the authors address very important medical problems in this paper, which is associated with small cerebral vessels and metabolic syndrome due to obesity. This is important not only from scientific point of view, but also from the quality of human life and that of society. So first, I would like to ask Paul to very briefly summarize the aim of the study.
Thank you, Akos. So the metabolic syndrome, which is a clustering of metabolic and cardiovascular risk factors affecting approximately 57 million adults in the US, we really don't know what goes on with the cerebral circulation in terms of the adaptations during the progression or the development of metabolic syndrome. And also our ability to blunt those risk factors or the changes associated with those risk factors is virtually unknown. So the purpose of the present study was twofold. One, to study the obese zucker rat, which is a translational model of metabolic syndrome, at key ages throughout the development of the metabolic syndrome to gain a fuller understanding of the development of the cerebral vasculature with the evolution of the systemic pathologies. And second of all, to determine the extent to which the interventions aimed at altering the major risk factors for metabolic syndrome, namely blood pressure, glucose, and lipids, and how those interventions affect or blunt the cerebrovascular adaptations that we see with the metabolic syndrome.
Thank you very much. You have used an animal model, yet several times you emphasized the translational approach of your investigation. What does that mean specifically?
Yeah, so we use the obese zucker rat, which is bred for a recessive mutation that causes leptin receptor dysfunction, and as such develops chronic hyperplasia and excessive calorie intake, so it becomes very obese, but also develops mild hypertension, hyperlipidemia, hyperglycemia, and insulin resistance. And from our point of view, we really wanted to touch home on the translational aspect in a number of different ways. From our group, we are keen on team science approach involving basic scientists with clinicians, and that's reflected within the authorship on this paper, ranging from clinicians from family medicine, vascular and bariatric surgery. An important translational aspect is asking clinically relevant questions. And indeed, from this paper, we wanted to know how aggressively can we intervene on a risk factor prior to the development of full-blown cardiovascular disease, i.e. metabolic syndrome. Essentially, can we treat early on when we see the warning signs develop and blunt the pathological changes that we see to the cerebral vasculature due to the accumulation of excess blood pressure, glucose, lipids, etc. And then another translational element to this study was use of the obese zucker rat, which has very similar characteristics to a human subject with metabolic syndrome. So it's mild hypertension, hyperglycemia. Yes, the animal is obese, and that's also reflective of today's society with, according to the CDC, approximately 35% of our individuals are obese, and about 6% are severely obese. So from a translational point of view, we feel that we hit a number of points here.
Yeah, thank you very much. And let me ask Dr. Lombard, who is a very well-known expert on vascular function and vascular structure, especially in the cerebral circulation, that what is the importance of these changes, what has been described in this study?
Thank you. Many of the changes occurring in vascular structure and function with aging and hypertension and obesity and metabolic syndrome are similar. These include impaired endothelium-dependent dilation, reduced nitric oxide availability, and changes in the passive mechanical properties of the blood vessels, notably increased stiffness and remodeling of vascular structure. These interfere with the ability of the vasculature to perfuse the tissue, supply oxygen and nutrients, and otherwise meet the needs of the tissue. Now, what's important to notice, the vascular changes in obesity are generally much more striking and complex than those that occur with simple aging. and these include a substantially larger component of oxidant stress and inflammation. And in addition to vascular changes in obesity can have particularly deleterious consequences in the cerebral circulation, including increased severity of stroke and cognitive defects, as noted by the authors.
Thank you very much. And my question is to Paul that what I really liked, the unique approach of this study, that you investigated pharmacological agents that are used in human medicine as of today, antihypertensive, anti-diabetic medicine. So what was your expectation and what were the results with this drug in this study? Did they correspond to the human finding or there was some differences?
So our expectations for the investigation of the pharmacological agents, which are used widely in clinical practice, goes back to our translational science. We knew that captopril would do an excellent job at decreasing blood pressure. Similarly, we knew that metformin would do an excellent job with glycemic control. So yes, they treat very well the risk factors, but do they really have an effect on the outcome, i.e. to what extent lowering blood pressure or improving glycemic control, how well does that blunt the cerebrovascular dysfunction? And also what type of drug is more important. Indeed, we were most interested in the statins, which are reported to have numerous pleiotropic effects, improving nitric oxide bioavailability, while also boosting the innate antioxidant system. So going on to the findings, the blood pressure drugs captopril and hydralazine blunted the onset of hypertension and was most effective in mediating the increase in cerebral arterial stiffness. Captopril also reduced inflammation and oxidative stress, suggesting that the efficacy and control of arterial stiffness may be primarily related to the antihypertensive actions rather than the pleiotropic effect, because hydralazine did not do such a good job at improving inflammation or oxidative stress. With regard to the glycemic control drugs that are metformin and rosiglitazone, both drugs improved insulin resistance with minimal effects on arterial pressure. Although metformin had little effect on the remodeling or the stiffness of the middle cerebral artery in the obese looker rat, the rosiglitazone did both. It improved the structural narrowing and improved the elasticity of the middle cerebral artery. Additionally, rosiglitazone was also effective at improving vascular reactivity through improvements in nitric oxide bioavailability that was not really evident with metformin. The divergence in the effectiveness of these anti-diabetic agents lie within the additional effects of rosiglitazone on improving endothelial function, inflammation, remodeling, and blood pressure did not appear to be as robust with metformin.
I just wanted to ask Julian's opinion about the mirror effect of nitric oxide and oxidative stress, whether they really can explain all the changes, because you use also inhibitors of nitric oxide synthase and scavenger of reactive oxygen species, whether that was corresponding to each other, so there are any room for other mechanisms in this metabolic syndrome-induced vascular dysfunction.
Sure. Nitric oxide and oxidant stress are crucial factors that affect cerebrovascular structure and function. And nitric oxide is well known to be a major mediator of endothelium-dependent dilation in multiple vascular beds, including the cerebral circulation. And we now know that endothelial dysfunction is a powerful prognostic indicator of a multitude of adverse cardiovascular events independent of any elevation in blood pressure. And importantly, in addition to its dilator properties, nitric oxide also has anti-inflammatory and anti-proliferative agents. Now, when you get elevations in oxidant stress, these are a hallmark of multiple pathological conditions, especially metabolic syndrome and complications associated with diabetes and other pathological conditions. And probably the most important consequence of the elevated superoxide levels in conditions such as obesity, diabetes, and hypertension and excessive salt intake is a reduction in nitric oxide levels. This not only leads to endothelial dysfunction, to endothelium-dependent dilator stimuli such as vascular shear stress, but also eliminates the anti-inflammatory and anti-proliferative actions of nitric oxide. However, in addition, increased levels of reactive oxygen species can have direct effects to create oxidant damage and impair a function of various systems. For example, oxidant stress can lead to potassium channel dysfunction in smooth muscle, damage to soluble guanylate cyclase, and its ability to form cyclic GMP, an important mediator of dilation. And finally, elevated superoxide levels can also lead to the generation of other harmful radicals such as peroxynitrite and hydroxyl radical, which are damaging in themselves. And this is particularly a problem in the metabolic syndrome that Paul is discussing.
Thank you very much. Actually, I have two somewhat provocative questions. If you ever would be an island and you could take only one of the drug and you have a metabolic syndrome, what drug would you take?
Now, that depends on which island I'm going to be stranded on. I would actually take Otovacet, and it had the best bang for its buck with the clinically FDA-approved drugs on the market. It lowered cholesterol significantly. It had minor effects on blood pressure, but it really had substantial improvements on nitrotyrosine, which is, as I mentioned before, a marker of oxidative stress. It lowered inflammation. It also lowered MCP1, which is a chemokine marker for macrophages and neutrophils. So all those combined, I would certainly like to take atorvastatin with me.
Thank you very much. Do you think that this cerebral vascular dysfunction described in obesity in humans would have cognitive dysfunction?
I do believe we would. There's various evidence in the literature that reflects that people with metabolic syndrome, obesity with elevated triglycerides or glucose, do have poor cognitive performance, cognitive declines, and even dementia. From a vascular point of view, we feel that the impaired cerebral vascular reactivity combined with the increased stiffness and the reduced microvessel density that we clearly see in the metabolic syndrome animal would lead on to having cognitive impairments because of the damage caused to cerebral autoregulation and blood flow reserve. Essentially, we would be limiting or reducing the cerebral vascular reserve capacity in the metabolic syndrome, favoring the occurrence of cognitive impairments and also ischemic stroke.
Thank you very much. And now I would like to ask Julian to kind of wrap up the take-home message of this investigation.
Thank you, Akos. I guess the bottom line is that there are plenty of things to like in this study. The authors use a very informative rodent model of obesity, the obese sucker rat, which is highly relevant and exhibits some rather spectacular changes in vascular structure and function. Sequential studies are performed to investigate the onset of various forms of vascular dysfunction that exist in the obese Zucker rat, and this is helpful in clarifying potential causes and effect relationships. And the authors use multiple drugs with different modes of action, and the effectiveness of each drug is verified. And finally, they close with a good discussion of the translational relevance of their study, namely the impact of obesity-related vascular changes on cerebral vascular pathology, notably stroke severity, and especially cognitive deficits.
Thank you, Julian. Thank you. Paul, would you like to add anything?
The only thing I would like to do is thank one of my close friends and colleagues here at WVU, as Jefferson Frisby, for his guidance and support over the last few years on work like this.
Thank you very much. We all know Jeff, of course, and it was really a great study. And I would like to thank you very much for both of you, your expert conversation on the special issue of the HAP heart on small vessels, big problem.
You've been listening to an HAP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.